ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, it's Claire Nichols here with a bonus episode of The Book Show to congratulate David Saloy on winning this year's Booker Prize for his distinctive original novel, Flesh.
I'm very pleased that readers have sort of understood the book, I guess, in the way that I hope they would.
The Booker, arguably the most prestigious writing prize in the English-speaking world, and the judges in praising this book, Flesh, said they'd never read anything quite like it. A dark book, but a joy to read. They say the writing is spare, and that is its great strength. Every word matters. The spaces between the words matter. And that is so true of this novel, Flesh. It follows this man, István. We meet him as a teenager in Hungary, and we follow him through his life. It is a life of great event. And Sarah Lestrange spoke to David Saloy about this novel.
Did you enjoy writing this book?
I did, yes. I mean, it was actually, it had quite a difficult beginning, this book, because I, in fact, abandoned another book, which I'd written a lot of, and this was, I guess, in 2020-ish. And I then obviously had to start again with a new book. And there was a sense that I couldn't really abandon another book. You know, you might be able to abandon one book, but you can't abandon two books in a row. Then it starts to look like a real problem. So, initially there was quite a lot of pressure, I would say.
Was that coming from you or from your publisher?
More from me, really. I mean, obviously, the publisher, I had to ask for more time, and the publishers were quite understanding about that. But the way it works, of course, is that I wasn't going to get any more money from them till I delivered a book. So there was that too. But the main pressure was from me, and from a sense that I couldn't sort of, I had this one had to work. So the early stages of writing the book were quite fraught, because I did feel the pressure, probably more than I have at any other point in terms of my writing career. But once it got going, and once I sort of felt that it was going to be something that was going to work, then I enjoyed it a lot, despite the fact that it's a lot of quite bleak things happen in it. Nevertheless, on one level, it was enjoyable to write.
I bet you're glad you abandoned that other book.
I am, yes. And I mean, even at the time, it was with a feeling of kind of relief more than anything else that I abandoned the book. I mean, I'd been working on it for some years, really, and it just wasn't going. And in fact, I've found, you know, I've sort of been using it as a quarry almost for the years since then. I mean, I've sort of mined a couple of short stories out of it, and actually, a few little chunks of it show up in Flesh, even, and so it wasn't entirely wasted time at all. But yes, in retrospect, I'm very glad that I did, and that was the right decision.
David, I was really drawn into Flesh, this story that begins in Hungary and travels to England. I'm intrigued by what drew you to explore the life of the main character, this ordinary man, István, who actually has an extraordinary life.
Well, I was very sort of clear when I was starting to think about this book that I wanted to write something that had a sort of English end and a Hungarian end. My own life at the time was sort of stretched between those two places. I grew up in England and in London, and that's very much the place that I guess still think of as home ultimately. But by that point, I'd been living in Hungary for many years. I have a Hungarian family. So I'd reached a point where I wasn't entirely at home in either place, in a funny way, and so I wanted to somehow write a book that reflected that, and that somehow, I guess, made a virtue of that aspect of my life at the time, and then to have a Hungarian character who emigrates to the UK seemed like a fairly obvious way to go in terms of the plot and the story. So it just sort of grew from there.
But interestingly, it starts in the 1980s and Hungary is just opening up. There are sort of these references to McDonald's and that sort of thing. But you wouldn't have been living there at that time because you were growing up in England.
I'm an outsider, really. As you say, I didn't grow up in Hungary, and even if I've lived there for a few years more recently, I'm still very much an outsider there. But I did visit Hungary very regularly. I mean, more or less once a year, I would say, in the 80s. I do have personal memories of the country at that time. Also, I have quite a few cousins who grew up in Hungary and who I now know quite well. So I have a pretty good feel for the country and for how it was then and how it has changed since then.
Right. So when we meet István, he's living with his mother in a small flat in Hungary. He's this sullen teen and he's seduced, well, or should I say groomed, by this 42-year-old woman who he's not even attracted to. He describes her as ugly. And this, it seems to be a foundational moment in his life. How does it shape his life?
Well, I think obviously it's extremely important and, as you say, foundational for the whole book. At first, I think when you say he's not attracted to her, I think it's probably more complex than that, actually. He sort of is, as well as thinking that he shouldn't be. But anyway, it's actually quite a complex situation, I would say, and it sort of develops across it's the first chapter of the book, and it develops across that chapter. And it obviously also sets the course of his life in some ways, both emotionally, in terms of it sort of sets up a pattern, which is then repeated in various ways later in the book. And also as a result of an episode of violence, which takes place directly as a result of this involvement with this woman, it really affects the course of his life in a narrative sense too.
This book is called Flesh After All, so maybe I shouldn't be surprised that we're following this man through these moments of extreme physicality, from sex to death.
Yeah, the whole book really is about, the plot of the book is built around mainly physical events, and the book itself sort of takes a view of István and the other characters, sort of it sees them first of all, looks at them first of all as sort of physical bodies. Obviously the title of the book is intended to reflect that.
I know this has been talked about a lot, but the dialogue in this book, it consists mostly of him saying, okay, I don't know, sure, or repeating a question. And once again, I mean, that shouldn't work, but it does. Why do you think it does work?
Well, I mean, with the dialogue, I was just almost sort of having fun with it. I wanted to make sort of write very realistic dialogues. I almost kind of bloody mindedly realistic dialogue, in that it's just the sort of repetitions and circularities and sort of non-meaningful grunts basically that constitute a lot of real dialogue between people in reality. I wanted to try and reflect that, bring that in. And I think for one thing, it can be quite comical, and I hope that it brings some comedy to the book at various points, the sort of extreme deadpan nature of that. It does help to feel the reality of things, I guess. I mean, it's part of the book's realism, and the emotional engagement which the reader has with István, I guess, is partly based on a very real, very strong sense of his reality and the reality of his world, which is very much the contemporary world in Europe. So from that point of view, it's also important. And it's amazing how much can be communicated by that sort of dialogue, really, because extreme sort of subtleties, which the reader will understand on some level. The word okay can mean a wide range of different things in different contexts.
You really do push him to extremes, beginning with that affair with an older woman. He then goes to juvenile detention, joins the army, moves to London, has fluctuations in wealth, and is exposed to death at every corner. Why were you wanting to push him to such extremes? Not everyone has, ends up in juvenile detention when they're teenagers.
No, sure. I mean, it is quite a dramatic. I mean, the book doesn't shy away from quite dramatic and extreme, as you say, events in terms of the plot. And it was a kind of a question of almost, first of all of the things which happen, I guess, as we said before, have this kind of physical aspect. I didn't want to sort of shy away from extremes of experience, I guess. I wanted to include them in the book. I mean, I guess most people's lives don't include quite as much extreme experience of one kind or another as Istvan's does, but most people's lives include something of that. And those, obviously, just because they are extreme, tend to be very important to people's experiences and to the shape and nature of their lives. And I wanted to, yes, I just wanted to sort of see how far that could be taken.
I really want to talk to you about Istvan's passivity. Even though a lot happens to him, he seems so passive. And a lot has been said about this passive nature of Istvan.
I think a lot of comment on the book has sort of focused on his passivity. I see why people think that, and to some extent it's definitely true. That pattern of passivity is, I guess, set in the first chapter in the context of that relationship with a much older woman who's very much in control of the situation, and then continues. But he's not entirely passive. You know, he shows significant agency in the book, but I think quite often the moments when he really shows agency happen in the gaps between the chapters of the book. So they're sort of de-emphasized, I guess. And that's probably why readers have this great impression of passivity, or this impression of passivity from him. The gaps in the chapters, between the chapters of the book, are a very important part of the way the book works, I think. Each chapter only covers a few weeks or months of his life, and then the gap to the next chapter is usually many years. So most of his life, in a way, takes place in these gaps between the chapters. But I hope that works in a positive way.
But even with this perceived passivity, isn't there this sense that you're exploring that actually most of us have life done to us? We're not heroes. We're not on a great adventure. We're responding to life with what it brings us. There's something very real about that.
Yes, I think so. I think that was a conscious decision in a way. The sense of life as being something that, as you say, kind of happens to us. I don't really believe in fate as such, but something like that. So that, you know, we have things happen to us. There are things that are beyond our control. Our lives are shaped, obviously, by things over which we have no control to quite a large extent. And yeah, so the book is sort of about that and about how we might respond to that.
Right. So, David, we've got this sparse dialogue, a passive main character. To me, it felt like you were maybe playing a game with yourself by placing these restrictions on the story you could tell about Istvan.
Kind of. The restrictions are built into the sort of whole idea of the book in a way. So it's not like I continually chafe against the restrictions as I'm writing. The restrictions have kind of become very internalized, I guess, as I'm writing the book. So yeah, but it's still, of course, it does still create this sense of the book as something. On one level, there is a sort of game-like aspect to it, for sure. It was a very satisfying, and yeah, it was a great experience.
Sounds like it was a risk, a big risk. Why take a risk?
I think just because if it works, then it's a more impactful experience, I think, for the reader. I personally don't like being told or what to think of what I'm reading. So I didn't want to do that as a writer either. But as I'm saying, there is always, I guess, an element of risk that you feel that you're taking a risk as a writer, because you're hoping that without saying so directly, you're nevertheless managing to communicate something quite specific to the reader. And it's wonderful when that actually happens.
David Saloy, the winner of this year's Booker Prize, speaking to the book show's producer, Sarah Lestrange. Sarah and I make this program on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Whadjuk Noongar people.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.